The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hey, pull up a chair. It's Hacks on Tap with David Axelrod, Robert Gibbs, and Mike Murphy.
And honestly, there's been no president since Abraham Lincoln, and perhaps in a certain way, including Abraham Lincoln, but there's been no president since Abraham Lincoln that has done more for the black individual in this country than President Donald J. Trump. There's been nobody, not even close.
There you have it, Mike Murphy. Yeah, better than Honest Abe. The great emancipator is in second place.
I hope there's room on Mount Rushmore. You know, it's a big mountain. Maybe we can fit one more in.
They maybe can turn it into condos.
Yeah, well, he would try. He would try with Saudi dough. Okay, so here we are.
Yeah. Go ahead and introduce our guest here, because he's right there in the belly of the beast where the...
I know. We had to go to the pro.
The long-running show is about to end, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Who can give us the eyewitness report and a lot of political insight across the board. Our dear friend, hack extraordinaire, Howard Wolfson. Howard, welcome to Hacks.
Good to be with you.
You're close up, so you must be getting a lot of coverage of this trial down there in Lower Manhattan. Certainly in the New York Post coverage of a certain kind. What is your sense, A, of where this is going, and B, whether it matters?
There's nobody that I know in New York who's following this at all, other than the Trump acolytes who show up to the trial wearing their identical suits and red ties.
Halloween. Had the Hell's Angels guy there yesterday.
Looking like Donald Trump in his suit. I do not think it will have any impact whatsoever on the presidential campaign and will have been a tremendous waste of time.
Well, he would agree with you on that. So let me ask you, let me just probe a little at both you guys. Is that true if whether he gets convicted or whether he gets off, likely by a hung jury? I mean, does it matter what the outcome is? Because, I mean, one of the things I'm wondering is whether it puts just a little bit more wind in his sails if he gets off.
I would agree. I don't really think the outcome matters all that much, but I think if he is not found guilty, which would be my guess is what's going to happen, it will actually put, as you put it, a little wind in his sails.
I think it only matters at the margins. I think his conduct for the guy who's Mr. Strongman, and I understand the argument, oh, he's taking on the system, he looks strong. I think he's looked kind of weak and mangy during all this, and defensive and old. So I think on the margins it hasn't been good for him. If he's convicted, I think it also reminds people who hate Trump why they hate him, and maybe they hate him a little more. But if it is a hung jury, he will just bellow from the rooftops, I've been cleared. They could not convicted. He'll turn that into an acquittal. And net, that could help him a little bit. And I think I'm kind of with Howard. I think there's a real fighting chance that can happen. All in all, though, I think it's secondary. I think, again, as much as we obsess about Trump, this race is still about Biden. And that's the problem. And that's why Trump's winning right now.
Howard, we didn't share all your luminous credentials as a hack here. We just short-circuited and stipulated that you're
he's legendary.
Hack, but he worked for years for Hillary Clinton, worked with her in her presidential race, worked for Chuck Schumer, and has been around politics all his life before working for Mike Bloomberg as deputy mayor and since in that, and also in that presidential race. Howard, I guess I'm interested in the read in New York about why this suit. A lot of us thought this is the last thing that Biden would want, for this trial to be the first trial, maybe the only trial of Trump. Is that your sense?
100%. This is the only trial which may be the case before the election. This is absolutely not the one that you would have wanted if you were the Biden campaign.
And why do you think, Bragg, as a New Yorker, I mean, Trump contends that at the same time that Biden is a senile imbecile who can't tie his own shoes, but on the side is masterminding a nationwide plot against him and involving local and federal prosecutors. But why did Bragg bring the charges in the first place?
I mean, it's a really good question. His predecessor looked at a similar set of facts and did not bring the case. I can't say that I understand the thinking all that well. I assume that he thought that on the facts and the law that he had a case and could prosecute it successfully, I think.
Or did he think that if he didn't bring the case that he would be attacked politically?
Maybe. I think the truth is that New York City has got a lot of challenges at the moment around crime and quality of life and disorder. And so I would have actually preferred our district attorney to be focused somewhat more on that and less on this case, but he didn't ask my advice.
Listen, Murphy, I mean, I don't think anybody, the weird thing about this is, does anybody really doubt, unless they're like hardcore Trump people, that he actually did the things that he's being accused of, that he had a assignation with a porn star, Stormy Daniels, and then tried to cover it up? I don't think anybody doubts that. The question is, does it matter to people? I know people say, well, he tampered with the election.
Yeah, no, I think people think, oh, he's totally guilty of being an asshole, but he's an asshole who can run the economy. And unfortunately, that's more the prism they're making their presidential decision on. Not that either one of these characters is that popular. And I'm with Howard. It is the, if Trump were to plan how to endure all his legal problems, this would be the sequencing he'd want. He gets a venue he can campaign against that his voters are suspicious of. He gets kind of an engineered carom shot legal case against him when the real bad stuff is out there, and this undermines all that. So, yeah, it's not a political masterstroke here, which does it to the highly intelligent, thoughtful, nuanced voter. In other words, our audience, small but elite.
Yes,
it is.
We won't
ironic.
Name you all right now, but we can.
For a political setup, it's pretty inept. That said, ultimately, all this trial stuff, because we're not going to get to the real juicy ones most likely, you know, half the country wants Trump in jail without a trial. And the other half wonders why Hunter Biden or Hillary or name a Democrat aren't in jail. So it just doesn't have the grip in our modern tribal deathmatch politics that it would have. It would have been an H-bomb, you know, two decades ago. But we're not in that era anymore.
Yeah, which is unfortunate, because it suggests that if you flood the zone with bad behavior, you can get away with it.
Yeah.
And that's sort of where we are.
Because
the things you call juicy are fundamentally that they sort of go to the heart of democracy. If a guy plots to overturn an election and does the things that Trump did, the fact that he's not going to stand trial for it before he runs again in an election in which he also promises or also refuses to promise that to accept the results of.
Right. But we used to have a political guardrail system based on shame where you didn't have to be dragged into trial. If you just publicly said stuff, if you publicly had January 6th, it would automatically put you in the ejector seat out of national life. And that is not the world we're in right now.
Well, that's certainly one of his achievements is. Blowing up those guardrails. Howard Murphy says, I think correctly, that Trump has so far effectively helped make this race all about Biden and not about himself, although I think he rarely objects to being the center of attention. But why do you, if you're a good strategist, you're a master strategist, you're over there, how do you turn that around at this juncture? It's getting late.
It's late. It's late and I'm worried.
In fairness, you're a worrier, so that we should stipulate that. You're a brooder. But anyway,
that is true.
I don't think you're unwarranted here. Go ahead.
The challenge, and I think for Biden, is that things that the electorate does not like about him are things that they see every day in real time with their own eyes, which is to say, he looks old to them. And when they go into the store and buy something, the prices seem too high. So they are well aware of the things that they don't like about Joe Biden and his policies, and they're kind of staring the voters in the face every day. And the things that they didn't like about Donald Trump, they don't really remember. And that's unfortunate.
The Biden theory is that they will remember those things once people focus on the campaign.
Yeah, they will after they fire Biden.
You know what? Time is a wasting. The Biden campaign tried to run positive ads on his record, tried to talk about Bidenomics. That was not particularly successful. I think the emphasis on Trump and the things that people did not like about him, the work of reminding them should have begun many months ago. And the fact that it has not occurred yet is very concerning. So, you know, I'd like to sugarcoat it, but I think the stakes are immense and the challenges are great.
Yeah, one of the problems, Murphy, is that in answer to the concerns about age, the campaign is trying to get him out more and more visible and more, in more energetic scenes. But that is a double-edged sword, isn't it? I mean, I think they have to do it, but he goes out there and it kind of accentuates the thing that Howard's talking about.
Well, yeah, that's the problem with everybody having the very simple moniker of he's too damn old. It's like having antlers. You go out and say, hey, I've cured cancer. And everybody says, what about those antlers? You can't make it go away. But I'm for a lot of stuff they ought to be doing. I think part of the problem, and we've talked about this a million times, I've been pounding on it for a year, you have too, you know, it's the chip in Biden's head. He wants to grab people by the lapels and say everything's going great. You don't understand the facts, man, and straighten them out. And we know that when the 82-year-old bald fat guy walks into the Chevy dealership and says, I'd like a Corvette, the salesman's job is not to say you're wrong. You really ought to get a nice square old guy car. You say, excellent, sir. I have a red one right here. You look great in it. And Biden's telling the customer they're wrong.
I just want to say for my own sake that there's nothing wrong with old fat guys, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, I've been working undercover in that precinct for a long time. But so anyway, he's telling the customer they're wrong. And, I've got a lot of critiques of the campaign, but I think Biden's got a firm grip on what he'll do and what he won't. One thing as a Murphy, I know something about is grumpy old Irish guys. And Biden's one of them, and they're hard to change. Remember, Biden's not a guy who came up winning a swing state all the time, Mr. Campaign. He's an inside guy. So they're in a tricky thing. You're right. And Howard makes the right point. You only have two resources in a campaign, money and time. And they're spending time like drunken sailors without a lot of impact. And, we're talking about the debate, but they're clearly trying to make a big changeup move, which I think I love the offense, but boy, oh boy, the risk is big too.
Howard, this issue of how he communicates, you point out the Bidenomics thing. Mike points out that point. This is an issue, and how I guess what I'm asking is, you've done a good job of analyzing the problem. How do you get on offense, and what kind of contrast do you set? Because I kind of believe that people, as Mike said earlier, have it's baked in the cake. Trump's an asshole. He misbehaves. He's all that stuff. People accept that, but they think he's strong and they think he's capable. And they're sort of forgetting, if the economy is their concern, what exactly the economy was good. They remember we handed him a pretty good deal when he came in. And it remained good until the pandemic that he mishandled. But his major achievement was this gargantuan tax cut that was highly unpopular and remained so. He's got a whole bunch of plans that would make inflation worse. He wants to scrap the Affordable Care Act, which people really like, and healthcare is a big issue. He wants to repeal the law that is lowering prescription drug costs for millions of Americans. Seems to me like there are contrasts to be struck that actually go to the things that people care about right now.
I would tally up what you just said, and then I would add abortion. And
of course,
I would talk about democracy for some voters and what happened at the Capitol January of 2021. And I think there's a strong case to be made around the contrast, but I don't see that case necessarily being made.
And, you know, they've had a money advantage, and you'd think that that money advantage would be used. And they are running ads. They ran, I thought, a decent ad on the Affordable Care Act. I think it was more about Biden than Trump, and it should have been more about Trump. But they've run it in the states. They spent a lot of money, I guess, running it. Now, there's this story this morning about the fact that Trump is at least in March, overtook Biden in terms of fundraising. I thought that was an ominous story. Biden still has a massive fundraising lead, a cash on hand lead. But in some ways, what this suggests to me is that small dollar donations have slowed down. And that, to me, is a kind of ominous development.
Well, there's not exactly an enthusiasm surge for Joe Biden. You know, you can feel it everywhere.
That's my point.
Low dollar fundraising is a good indicator.
I also don't think that Joe Biden's going to win because he had a $40 million cash advantage over Donald Trump.
Really?
I mean, that's the kind of free media that Donald Trump can make up in a day.
My uncle Buzz from Macomb County was just calling me. You know, I'm studying the FEC reports here in Michigan. Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more.
First of all, my point was that it is sort of a surrogate for enthusiasm. And if his money's slowing down, that's concerning. But the second point is we're all message guys here. But if there were field guys here, what they would say is if you've got marginal races in places like Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, the ability to marshal organization on the ground is important. It actually is the field goal team, and that's ultimately how you score.
But
so,
as message guides, we'd say, excellent, go back to your shoebox full of 3x5 cards with names on them, because if you don't have a message, you can't organize
Well, that is absolutely true. And I mean, I think that's the fundamental thing that we're talking about here, which is I don't think anybody could tell you right now what the Biden message is. And messages are not
Get off my lawn. That's the best I got.
Well, there is that. But messages are not an amalgam of issues.
Right.
Messages
are
larger. Messages are narrative. And we don't know. It's not clear what the Biden narrative is right now. And that's where the time elapsing is really concerning.
Yeah, you guys can straighten me out, but I don't know why this is
I've
so
hard. I've tried
for
like 3 years and nothing's
worked.
Yeah,
no, you've tried for decades.
Yes.
Why aren't they just doing this is a war for the middle class? I'm on your side. Trump isn't. You want your insulin. You want your kids to live in a democracy. You know, bingo, bango, bingo. Simple, stark choice about middle class economics and motive.
An answer to that question is that one of the strengths of populists like Trump is that they do a very good job of convincing the middle class that they are on their side. So unlike a Romney, who I think highly of, but was essentially a plutocrat and acted like one and talked like one and defaulted into plutocracy when confronted.
God, that's why I loved him. But yes, I agree with this.
Murphy's an aspiring plutocrat.
Indeed. The populace that we see, not just in the United States, but in other parts of the world, do a very good job of disguising the fact that they are not actually on the side of the middle class. And so Trump's brand is, you know, fighter. And there are lots of working class Americans who think that he is on their side. And so the challenge of convincing them otherwise is greater than it would be if we were running against Mitt Romney.
Yeah, no, this is very true. And the Republican method is to make the schism not economics, but culture.
Yeah.
And because the Democrats are in the insufferable woke business all too often, it just rings the perfect bell to let the Trump populace of the world go with kind of the damn right issues.
Okay, let's take a break right here for a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back.
You know, David, I always make sure to mention the brand within the first 10 seconds of the ad. What's the brand?
Go.
Helix. The Helix, yes. Mattress. Yeah, God's nectar of good sleep. And you, my friend, I know are a real, forget about hackaroos, you're a Helix-a-roo.
I have partaken in that nectar for a couple of years now, and I love the Helix mattress. Anybody who listens to this podcast knows that I checked it out because they were a sponsor, and I love it. And I think your child sleeps on one of them. Isn't that right?
Yeah, we have a young daughter, and I'm tired of there are monsters in the room. So I finally just got a Helix kid mattress, and now out like a light. It's incredible. So I'm telling you, this Helix thing is a winner. And I personally like the floor show when you get one, because they ship it to you in a box and you open it and then you get to reenact the old movie yeah. of the blob taking over, because it just grows. There's no stopping it.
It comes sealed in plastic and it rolled up. And you say, how could this be the great mattress I'm anticipating? And then it rolls out. And it is, in fact, an incredible mattress. The Helix lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including the award-winning Lux and Ultra Premium Elite collections. The Helix Plus, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, which I appreciate, and the Helix Kids mattress, designed for growing bodies and endorsed by child sleep experts and Mike Murphy.
Well, you know what I love about it? Because clearly they've got like a team of mattress geniuses at work at Helix World Headquarters in what we like to call the Helix Tower. They have the Helix Sleep Quiz. And this is really smart because you go online to the Helix site. We're going to give you the URL. And you take this little 2-minute quiz and it decodes what you need in a mattress and matches you up perfectly.
Totally, and your personal mattress is shipped straight to your door free of charge. Helix knows that there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial. That's pretty good, and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress.
It also has enhanced cooling features, many of them do, that keeps you from overheating at night. And boy, I'll tell you, that my wife, even though we live in Los Angeles, has a quilt that they normally only sell in the Yukon. And overheating can be a problem. So a cool mattress, boy, I'm going to have to check out the grown-up Helix now. On your recommendation, David, because boy, oh boy, I have people, you know, stop me and say, hey, I bought a Helix mattress on Hacks and I love it.
It is, as the president would say, no joke. I mean it. I'm serious.
So you deserve one of these, Hackaroo. How do you get one, David? Where do you go? What do you do?
Well, Helix is offering up to get this 30% off all mattress orders. Yep. And 2 free pillows for our listeners. So go to helixsleep.com/hacks. That's helixsleep.com/hacks. That's Helix, H-E-L-I-X, sleep.com/hacks. Now, this is their best offer yet, Hackaroos, and it won't last for long, so take advantage of it, because
with Helix,
better sleep starts now. You said, Mike, that Biden's never had, until he got to the presidential races, he's never actually been in a really competitive situation because of the nature of Delaware politics and so on. He won a...
Yeah, with general election voters.
He ousted, with general election voters, he ousted an incumbent Republican in his first race and didn't really have that much trouble after. But senators have a particular, and Howard knows this because he worked with them, they have a particular orientation towards campaigns. And in Senate races often are just about issues because people aren't paying that much attention. You run the ad on Medicare and Social Security.
Yeah, and you're running as an advocate. You know, I'm going to go fight for X on the floor rather than I'm going to run the state as a governor or president or whatever.
But these races are tactical in many ways. Presidential races, you can't win just as a tactical race. And so there needs to be a narrative. I think you can tuck the populism into a narrative about what kind of future you, I mean, I've said it here before. This other guy's consumed by himself and his past. I'm fighting for you and your future. What kind of future do you want? And then the subset of those things is all the issues that Howard mentioned. It's challenging to be the candidate of the future when you're 82 is one of the problems
here. Yeah, and part of the problem is the Repubs have gotten it down when they're not tripping over their own clown shoes, you know, worried about science or space lasers. They've gotten down to the Democratic brand is not on your middle class side. Defund the police. You know, you can go down kind of all those cultural schisms. And though Biden has been fairly adroit at trying to distance himself from that stuff, it's still out there and it affects him. And because he's not a big bright lantern of what Joe Biden is for, it's more Joe Biden doing what every Senate in particular incumbent wants to do. We've all been there. Well, here's the first spot. I've written it myself. Don't know why I need you. Listen, idiots, you owe me your vote. Here's what I've done for you. And then a 4-hour list of minor accomplishments. And that's the thing they got to break. Now, they have a plan to break it. We probably ought to talk about this, and then we can wind around to the depressing world of the Middle East. You know, I see a pattern here.
But I know where you're going. But before you do, you mentioned police. The border stuff, I think, continues to churn. Schumer's putting that bill that Biden had agreed to with Lankford. That was a tough, tough border bill. Lankford being the Republican senator from Oklahoma. And Trump killed that because he wanted the issue. They're putting it back on the Senate floor next week. It will fail, but they want to do it primarily to give their incumbent Democrats a chance to vote for it. But it does raise the question, why are we still waiting for Biden to do something on his own that is viewed as meaningful and dramatic about the border, Howard?
They keep leaking these stories to the New York Times that suggest that he's, you know, just on the verge of putting the border on, you know, double secret probation, and then it never happens. And it's a real problem. I mean, the deal that he agreed to with Lankford is a deal that he could have presumably gotten 2 or 3 years ago, chose not to. And it's kind of too late. It's clearly too late for a bipartisan deal. The question is whether or not there are unilateral steps that he could take.
Well, I think he should do it. I mean, he should try. He should get caught trying for sure.
Absolutely.
But you know what happens? He leaks those stories to the New York Times, and then all the New York Times readers protest because they're concerned about that he's going to be too harsh. And then they contemplate it some more, which I think is a mistake.
They will see harsh when Donald Trump gets control of the border.
No, it's a good point. And, you know, I don't get it. Presidency is a big microphone for that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm still mad about when he went to the border. A low-ranking intern in Deaver's old shop in the Reagan White House would have said, hey, the old guy can't walk. Put him in a Jeep with two guys with machine guns and put on his MacArthur glasses and let him look tough. And they couldn't even do that. Instead, they had him shuffling like the Denny's parking lot at 501.
Go down there within a day or two of when Trump killed the bill and say you're going to take the bill and put it in the form of an executive order. And then,
offense. So anyway, to where we are now, I see the pattern. New York Times does a swing state poll. It's terrifying. There's a big panic. Biden rolls out to the State of the Union. He actually exceeds low expectations. They give him the magic vitamin shot. I don't know. Maybe Dr. Landry's around somewhere. But anyway, Biden does well, you know, relatively speaking. Everybody calms down. They're back in business for a little while. They don't really pick up the momentum and do anything with it. Now, yet again, another New York Times poll of the swing states, equally even more terrifying, because it shows three of them kind of spinning out of control, the six, the Sunbelt ones, looking particularly dim. And so they had the meeting and said, well, we got to do our playbook again. Let's blow this race wide open with the debate. Now, I like the offense, but if good Biden shows up, a la State of the Union, and they win the little sub-debate about whose microphone is turned on and off when who's speaking, which is a clever little thing that, as of now, looks like it's still part of the deal, we'll see, Biden could get a reset and have a moment to grab everything, and hopefully they got a plan to roll it out. The problem is, in exchange for that potential badly needed rocket fuel, there's also a risk that Biden's awful, has a bad night, starts rambling on about, no, write this down, best economy in 5 years, and goes into kind of cranky Joe mode.
I think he says 50, but
Yeah, well, I know it's the eighth best Thanksgiving in a leap year. I'm still remembering that one. Or Bidenomics, we can thank. But, you know, by the way, when I'm selling crap burgers, I don't say, we got to change the name to Murphy Burger. So everybody knows crap equals Murphy.
Okay,
but
great.
Anyway,
now there goes one of our ads, but go ahead.
So bottom line is, Biden's either going to get a great restart here or the biggest panic in the history of the Democratic Party. And people openly, I think, start saying about, step aside, Joe, it's pre-convention. I know it's never happened. It's really hard to do. But against Trump, the end of the world, don't underestimate how bad the panic can be. So I'm glad they made the move, but I sure hope they're ready to exploit it. And I'd have low confidence.
Howard, I prepared or been part of the team, I should say, that helped prepare a president, an incumbent president, for debates. And I had circled in red the first debate, because the history of incumbent presidents in first debates is pretty dismal, because those presidents haven't had anybody in their grill for a long time, and now they do. And now their impulse is to defend every aspect of their records, which Biden is prone to do anyway. If you're sitting there preparing him, what are your messages to him about this debate?
I mean, I agree with Mike that the stakes couldn't be higher. It's the kind of thing that you do when you are behind and not ahead, because when you're behind, you have to take risks. But the downside of taking risks is that if it goes badly, you're even in a bigger hole than when you began. And so I don't envy the folks in that debate prep process. Look, David, you have some of your former colleagues are quick to accuse those of us who are concerned about all of this of quote unquote bedwetting. And let me be clear. I'm wetting the bed every night. I mean, yeah. I am.
Sorry, your wife.
Yeah, I'm changing those sheets every morning.
I'm wearing rubber underwear here, Mr.
Yeah,
President.
I want to be clear that there is significant cause for concern, and those of us who identify those concerns are growing in number.
And so sometimes
and in voice,
the pearls need to be clutched.
Indeed,
Murphy made a couple of points that I think are important. One is, one thing that Trump and the Republican Party has done for 5 years that redound to Biden's benefit here is that if the guy makes it to the microphone and puts any coherent sentences together, he will have exceeded the expectations that they have set for him. Now, I don't think that's enough, because those sentences have to, as you guys pointed out earlier, they have to frame an offense and a message, and he has to take it to Trump. You know, and I think people are going to be looking for that, that not just the messaging, but the energy of that. But what are you telling him?
Energy would be important. I mean, that's maybe a low bar, but you've got to come in energetically and engaged. Look, this is part of the challenge, which is, everybody knows someone who is 82 years old, and everyone understands the challenges that age can mean for our parents or grandparents. And, you know, they will be watching very carefully just to see whether or not they think he's up to the job from an age and energy perspective.
Yeah.
And he's going to have to demonstrate that he is. I mean, that's, again, maybe that's a fairly low bar.
I want to point out, Murphy, that the Rolling Stones are touring again now. I think they're all the surviving members are over 80.
Yeah, I know. And Mick Jagger is a friend of mine, David. But Joe Biden, you're no Mick Jagger.
You make it's a good comparison, because you look at Mick Jagger and you say, boy, there's a guy who's 80 and he acts like he's 65 or 55. You know, we all know people who are 80 and act 10 or 15 years younger. And we all know people who are 80 who act their age, and we know people who are 80 who act like they're 90. And Joe Biden's going to have to go out there and convince people that he's an 80-year-old who's up to serving 4 more years in the toughest job in the country.
Yeah, especially when all Trump has to do is, remember what you were paying for lettuce? It's unbelievable. It's the worst it's ever been. And just harp on simple stuff, which Trump is good at.
You know, we've done a lot of harping on Biden here. Let's also acknowledged that there are risks for Trump as well. He didn't particularly help himself in his first debate last time. Now it turns out he was going through COVID and God knows was on what. But nonetheless, part of the theory of the Biden case is let the country in
see
a very
him,
intensive way. See him. Yeah. See him and hear him, because he's saying some batshit crazy stuff out there.
Yeah, no. They're both, again, this is the Repubs have nominated the one candidate Joe Biden can beat, and the Dems have nominated the one candidate Trump might be able to beat. So this thing is going to be, it's going to be something. But it, my dark Irish outlook, I'm most fascinated academically because I'm, you know, I'm hoping Biden does great. I can't abide the idea of Trump in the Oval Office, even though I'm a conservative and have my issues with Biden. What happens if Biden really whiffs? It's going to make the panic over the polls look like amateur night.
Yeah, Howard, what about that? Do you think that at this point, if he does, and I'm betting that he will rise to the occasion, he will outperform expectations because that's generally what he does. But what if he does whiff, it is 2 months before the convention. Do you think, you being now a member of the Bedwetters of America, do you think—
President.
There will be— I don't know, man. That's a fierce competition.
Chairman.
But we're with you. We'll run your campaign. Do you think that he, do you think there will be a hue and cry at that point, an open hue and cry? I kind of think people have sort of, not to extend the metaphor, made their bed here.
I don't. I think there will be a hue and a cry.
Yeah, I think open calls, step aside, Joe, you owe it to the country. And they'd be right, by the way, if he whiffs this debate. Stakes are too high for sentimentality and the, you know, the indulgence. The problem is then it's Kamala. That's the one problem. So you get rid of Biden, you get another problem.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it would go that way, but—
Well, that would be the argument. We need a restart.
But it does speak to how messy that would be, you know. And I kind of, you know, in a way, I think one of the reasons they wanted this debate— Not in a way, I know. One of the reasons they wanted this debate is there are still people out there who don't believe this is going to be the choice, that somehow we're going to end up with different candidates. And I think the Biden folks wanted this debate early because they want people to focus on the fact that, no, folks, this is the choice.
Well, that the problem is that may focus them on, we got to do something.
It might.
Pre-convention. But no, look, I would have done it because I think they're in a corner and they're losing. And that whatever, they've got to shake it up, so they got to roll the big dice. But boy, oh boy, they're very big dice here.
Okay, then let's take a break right here, and we'll be right back.
This podcast is sponsored by Naked Wines.
So, Murphy, we've talked about this before. I really like a good glass of wine. Susan and I, my wife, we start off every evening that way. But I hate going to wine stores because I'm overwhelmed by the shelves and shelves and shelves and trying to determine what's good, what's a good price. Don't have to do it anymore. You know why?
Why?
Naked Wines. Naked Wines has solved my problem. Naked Wines, you'll remember, is a subscription service that seamlessly connects you to the finest independent winemakers on the planet, not just in the country, but on the planet. So you get a box of the market's best quality wines, however often you'd like, for a fraction of the price you'd normally pay in stores.
So use our code HACKS, both for the code and password at nakedwines.com, and get their incredible deal of six bottles for just $39.99. But you know, I'm a skeptic, David. You know that. So I want to know, how does Naked Wine do this? Six bottles of good wine for $39.99. Explain to me the magic behind that incredible offer.
Naked Wines connects winemakers and wine drinkers directly, cutting out the middleman, allowing for vineyard-to-your-door delivery at up to 60% off what you'd pay in a store. By cutting out those traditional retail middleman costs, winemakers can pass these savings on hundreds of top-quality, award-winning wines to you without skimping on quality. And, you know, they give you a quiz. They ask you what kind of wines you like. They send you that initial box for $39.99 with bottles of the kinds of wine you enjoy, and they really are good. I might try and fool you, but not our listeners about this.
You're trying to fool me and the voters all the damn time. But look, this sounds like an incredible deal. Six bottles for $39.99. All you got to do, use our code HACKS, both for the code and the password, at your new wine place to go, nakedwines.com, and check out their incredible deal.
So again, head to nakedwines.com/hacks and click Enter voucher at the top right and put in HACKS for both the code and password to get six bottles of wine for just $39.99 with shipping included. That's $100 off and less than $7 per bottle.
That's nakedwines.com/HACKS and use the code and password HACKS and grab six bottles for just $39.99. One last time, that's nakedwines.com/HACKS, code and password HACKS for
$100 off your first six bottles. So Biden was at Morehouse College on Sunday giving the commencement speech. We got, I think, a little clip of it here.
Black police officers, black veterans protecting the Capitol were called, another word, as you recall. They also say out loud, these other groups, immigrants poison the blood of our country. Like the grand wizard and fascist said in the past. But you know and I know, we all bleed the same color. In America, we're all created equal. Extremists close the doors of opportunity, strike down affirmative action, attack the values of diversity, equality, and inclusion. I never thought when I was graduating in 1968, as your honoree just was, we talked about, I never thought I'd be in a present a time when there's a national effort to ban books, not to write history, but to erase history.
Mike, every single poll, including that New York Times set, and then, you know, there's some polls over time that have reflected this. He does have a problem. He has a problem with young people. He has a problem with younger African-Americans and Hispanic voters. I saw one poll that suggested, you know, black men under 29, you know, inching up to 30 for Trump. I don't know that that's going to materialize, but it certainly doesn't suggest that they're working their way toward Biden.
Yeah, you don't want to be an incumbent Democratic president having to fight like hell for the black vote, you know, going into the summer before your election. That said, if you don't believe in some revert to mean here, which is the most likely, if not certain, case, then Biden's toast and fundamentally gone. He's going to lose. Not a lot they can do. So I think with some of the attention being paid, I'm more optimistic about that vote getting back where it needs to be, although probably a little under what normal is, which is yet another problem. I mean, my biggest worry tactically in this area is not that Biden, and it was an excellent speech, above Joe Biden average, but it's pure defense. He's, you know, this is firefighting, which is not where you want to be. But my big worry is the Repubs have been watching how the Dems have elevated, and I think this is very dangerous stuff. It's politically effective, but boy, you're playing with nerve gas, elevating nut Republicans with their money in primaries. Well, now there's nothing to stop the Trump campaign from paying that back by putting $1 million into Detroit, Philadelphia, Atlanta, Phoenix even, behind Cornel West, and to try to elevate candidacies that pull votes off Biden in that vote, which is a black vote.
Is Cornel West even on those ballots?
I'm not sure.
I think it's more likely they'll try and throw him onto Bobby Kennedy Jr.
Well, both. But if I were the Trump guys, and I don't want to give them advice because I don't want to win, but would I go spend $1 million on the street in Detroit doing a write-in for a Cornell thing to shave Wayne County by 30,000 votes? Damn right I would. And I'd try it in Georgia and Philly, too. Because if Cornell gets attention, he can sell some tickets. So anyway, this is yet another problem, another manifestation of the global Biden problem. He's fighting fire in his own barn when he ought to be on offense. And, you know, they have to do it. Tactically, it was good, but it's an indicator of people want to fire the incumbent president, and that is a hard stranglehold to get out of.
Howard, that speech at Morehouse, there weren't great protests, as was feared, but there also was sort of a tepid response to it. Part of the reason was continued protests about Israel and Gaza and Biden's support for Israel. He's kind of getting it on both ends here by, I think, being responsible, pushing the Israelis to be more surgical in their approach, while at the same time making sure that they can defend themselves. This is a mess. It's a nuanced situation in an environment that doesn't really embrace nuance.
Well, you know, Joe Biden was having problems with non-college educated men of color prior to war in Gaza.
But I'm talking about young people as well. I'm not just talking about them. Yeah, I'm not. I agree with you, but I'm talking about the larger problem.
Yeah, I mean, this was not something that anybody anticipated. It was obviously not anything that the Israelis anticipated, and its impact on our politics has been significant. And you're very right that he has alienated both Arab American voters and some Jewish voters in ways that are very unhelpful. It is interesting. I went to Israel about a month ago with former Mayor Bloomberg. We were there for a day, and we had a series of meetings with Israelis from across the political spectrum. People both from on the right and the left, and to a person, they only had praise for Joe Biden and his administration and the way that he had supported the Israeli people in this time of need. And it was a very interesting corrective to some of what you hear on the Jewish right,
Fox News,
in this country, where, you know, somehow Biden has become an enemy of the Jewish people. That is not what people in Israel think. And so the folks with the most skin in the game thought that he was doing a pretty good job for them. And that was a very meaningful thing to hear on our trip.
I do think it was a stumble cutting off the arms. I was at a DMFI, Democrat Majority for Israel event last night, helping them raise a little money to beat kooks in Democratic primaries. And, you know, got an earful about that. And I understand the big picture and everything, but it was a stumble because it brought them no love with the iHeart, you know, Hamas campus crowd. And put a bad shockwave, I think, to his own supporters in the Stand With Israel community. Now they're trying to clean it up, and I think they're doing a pretty good job. But it was, in my view, a stumble.
Well, for one thing, they shot down 300 missiles. They're continuing. I mean, the fact is that they had been speaking privately for months with Netanyahu about how he was going to approach this, and he flouted them. He ignored them. And so, you know, and they were there, the withholding of those, temporary withholding of those, weapons were a private communication between them and the Israelis. The Israelis leaked it to put pressure on Biden. You know, you're dealing with a guy in Netanyahu who has his own political agenda, and that makes this more difficult. He has no particular impetus to end this war quickly. He knows that he's going to be subject to an inquiry after this war that's going to uncover the fact that they were woefully unprepared, and he's supposed to be the national security hawk, but was so distracted by his own domestic political needs that he neglected to take care of business. And, you know, has backhandedly helped Hamas over the years because he didn't want the Palestinian Authority to be compared. I mean, there are a lot of, and, you know, obviously he's in the Trump position where if he loses, he has legal jeopardy from cases that are now forestalled because he's prime minister. That's the guy you're dealing with. It makes it very, very hard. And the last thing I'm going to say about this, Murphy, is, and I've said it before, I'm the son of a Jewish refugee. I care deeply about Israel. I was horrified and devastated by what happened on October 7th. I believe the Israelis have every right to defend themselves and to go after the people who were responsible for that. Having said all that, I think it's still, I don't begrudge those who shed tears for the starving children of Gaza, because I do.
Yeah, I think we all do.
And I think Biden does, too. And so to just ascribe everything to a kind of political chess game that he's playing, I think is unfair to him.
No, I'm just calling the hack scorecard here. It was a bungle politically.
Okay. All right.
You know, that's what we do here. I have my own feelings about all this, but it's...
This isn't conscience on tap here?
we're being a good Catholic boy. We're due a special episode at the end of the year of our atonement.
That will be a 30-second podcast.
Yeah, we're keeping under a minute.
You know, I talk to candidates and staffs and staff across the country in these battleground states, people running for Senate and down ballot offices. And one of the things that was alarming about that Times poll, we haven't talked, Murphy, since I think it came out, but.
Yeah, the delta between the Senate cats and Biden. You know, that can break either way. You can say, well, Biden has room to improve. The generic vote for these senators is better than Biden. Or, and this is what I believe is an anchor around their neck. It'll be pulling them down in the end, not the other way around. But it's a real thing.
Well, one of the things that they say is that they're very wary of appearing with them. Now, look. In 2010, in the midterms, I remember how people tried to stay away from Obama in that midterm, but less so in the reelect.
I was going to say, the problem is it's not the equivalent of 2010, it's the equivalent of 2012.
No, I understand. Yeah,
it's on
I understand.
The ballot.
So this is, you know, these guys who are running, mostly guys, there's Tammy Baldwin also and Jackie Rosen, but the people who are running in these tough races are, you know, they're cautious about how much they want to be seen with him. Now they will deny it.
Howard Wolfson approved rubber underwear. If I were a Democratic senator on the ballot in a swing state with Biden, I would have the triple ply on, because
I'm gonna begin marketing bedwetters for Biden.
I can send you a pricks for Biden button that someone sent me.
I'm gonna do the it's okay to clutch a damn pearl bumper sticker. I think.
I mean. You know, democracy, the future of democracy is at stake. So.
Right. He never should have run.
If you're not concerned now, when will you be?
Yeah. No, I agree. And this is the most frustrating thing about it, because this is not like they screw up the election and, you know, God forbid Mitt Romney wins, which I'd be, of course, totally for. This is existential stakes. So we can't take a, well, we'll try harder tomorrow attitude about it. It's big.
Guys, listen, I'm going to be in the RV to Alberta with you if this thing goes the wrong way. But having said that, this is the race. And it's actually, with the tenor of this conversation is dark. You know, you look at these battleground states, and this is a winnable race still. And, you know, the question is, Does Biden have the wherewithal to go and his team to do the things that need to be done to win it? And we'll see. We're going to be talking about that for the next 5.5 months. But right now,
thing is, we've been talking about it for a year, waiting for the cavalry, and I've yet to smell any horses.
Well, if they'd listen to the damn podcast, I mean,
know what the hell.
To make the audience feel a little better about my ability to prognosticate, I think it's fair to say that nobody has worked on more losing presidential campaigns than I have. So you can take a lot of what I say with a grain of salt in that context.
Well, yeah, but you're also a canary who's seen a few coal mines collapse. So,
well, then maybe we should have asked you, what wouldn't you do here, Howard?
Exactly, exactly. The George Costanza of presidential politics.
Okay, then let's take a break right here, and we'll be right back.
Hey, America and hackaroos, if you love Hacks on Tap, you got to check out my Brainiac friend, Ambassador Frank Lavin's wonderful podcast. Talks politics, talks everything. This guy worked in the Reagan White House on politics and around the world. You'll get smarter in 20 minutes with my friend Frank Lavin's incredible podcast, books and insight. I never, ever miss it.
We should give our listeners a say here and fire up the old mailbag. It's listener mailbag.
Okay, if you have a question for the Hacks, all you got to do is send it to us at our groovy email address, hacksontap@gmail.com, hacksontap@gmail.com. Or there's a lonely rotary phone in the back of some Chicago betting parlor / Democrat Cook County organization where you can not only leave a message for a question, you can instantly be registered to vote for the rest of your life. I can't remember the number, so we recorded it. 773-389-4471. I'll repeat it because who can remember that? 773-389-4471. Okay, before we get to the questions, Howard Wilson's a very important man. He can't be screwing around with podcasts for too long. He's got to run off to save New York City and other things. So, Howard, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be with you and feel so optimistic at the conclusion of our conversation.
Well, listen, I'm looking forward to your diaper stand at the
at the convention.
National Convention, yes. Yeah. We'll stop by. Maybe we'll broadcast from there.
I'll be selling gas masks. I have a bigger margin.
See you, Howard. Thank you so much.
All right, Captain Sunshine, thank you.
Bye.
Murphy Adrian has taken the time to leave a thoughtful message right on our voicemail, and I think it's for you.
Hey, Hacks, this is Adrian calling from Chicago's River North neighborhood. I want to know why it's not a bigger story in the media that Donald Trump is consistently losing about a fifth of the Republican primary vote months after Nikki Haley dropped out, most recently in Maryland, which is a closed primary. Seems like if Joe Biden was losing this much vote in his primary, it would be a much bigger story. Thanks, everyone.
Hey, Adrian, great question. Yes, the ghost of Nikki Haley is doing some numbers. I was looking at some Michigan stuff because that's one of the really key states and my old stomping ground. And in West Michigan, Canton, Ottawa, she's doing over 30% of the vote, and she's not even in the race in the primary. Now, look, some of it is Democrats in the open primaries crossing over to, like, get to vote against Trump twice, once in the Republican primary, once for Biden. But there are plenty of Republican areas. Indiana was a good example. Marion, she did a responsible, I think, over 25% or 24-25% of the vote there. That's Indianapolis in the suburbs. It is a tell of Trump weakness. On the other hand, a Republican or an independent protest vote against Trump in the primaries by voting for Haley, even though she's not in the race, is not the same as a vote for Joe Biden. Some will go back. But it shows there's some vote in play, and it shows Trump has weaknesses. So it is a hopeful sign, but I don't think it's been totally exploited yet by the Biden campaign. But it's something they ought to spend a lot of time thinking about and working on, because those voters are literally scratching and clawing to try to find something other to do, at least in the primary, than vote for Donald J. Trump. And let me just add a quick post. I'd see Adam asked about the West Wing and Stephen Root's character, yes. Arnold Vinnick's political guy. Yeah, people tell me that all the time.
Yes, I just Adam said, I just rewatched the West Wing and am convinced the political advisor to Senator Arnold Vinnick, who was running for president in that show, played by actor Stephen Root, is a carbon copy of Mike Murphy. Am I crazy? I can't answer the last part of your question, but I will tell you that there is a sort of startling resemblance between Stephen Root and Mike Murphy. Did you consult on that, Murphy?
You know, quick, true, self-indulgent story. During the last years ago, the Democratic convention, this is a true story, a CNN camera crew was rolling down Manhattan covering the convention, and they saw this guy, a shaggy guy, walking in a jacket with blonde hair, and they pulled over and interviewed him, asking that Mike Murphy what he thought. And finally he said, "Who the F is Mike Murphy? I'm an actor." And it was Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Look a little like him.
Yeah, I used to back in the day. Great actor, genius actor. So is Stephen Root, one of the great character actors. I don't know. I will say that in For All Mankind, the alternative history series on Apple, on their website, they do a fake history news thing, and they put my face up there. Somebody in the writer's room having some fun quoting me about a fictional candidate. So, yeah, I haunt you in pop culture. But I've heard that a lot, and I've got to ask one of the West Wing writers if it's true. Lawrence O'Donnell might have been involved in that subterfuge of that character, because I think he invented the whole Arnold Vinnick thing when he wrote on that show.
You mentioned CNN, and I was remiss when we were discussing the debate as a CNNer. I'm excited that CNN has that debate, and I'm looking forward to Jake Tapper and Dana Bash moderating that debate. They're going to have their hands full, but I think they're up to
it. Jake's pretty strong, and so is she. So
yeah, so it's going to be an interesting night. So you've got one for me, I think.
Okay, we're going with the double voicemail this time because people are using the secret number. This is for David, and it is from Jim.
Hey, Hacks, Jim from Minnesota. What do you think about the idea of Biden opening an account on Truth Social? He can needle Trump on his own platform. Trump would probably get Biden kicked off in no time, but then Biden can say he's too scared to let Biden tell the truth. Is there any downside to Biden for trying this? Thanks. Love your show.
Thanks, man. I love your mischievous mind. That's such a clever little play. It would be a really, I think, classy and beneficent thing to do, given the fact that Truth Social is crashing and burning. I think they lost some vast sum of money, I read the other day. So maybe it would show a good spirit to Biden to say, I want to join and help you out. But seriously, it'd be interesting to see. I think he'd feel a little out of place there because he doesn't tweet in caps and all of that. But
no triple exclamation points.
That sounds like a Murphy type maneuver.
I love it, Jim. Put on some chainmail and I'll buy your ticket to Biden headquarters. You ought to show up there tomorrow and go to work. They could need more of that thinking. And by the way, they do it with Biden. They throw Biden off. Then the next day, Kamala does it. And then the next day, and they all have a turn. And, you know, it would drive Trump stone cold crazy, which he already is. But I think it's a great idea. And more tactical stuff like that to needle Trump is a really good idea. So you have a future in politics, Jim. Good idea. Hey, we've been so bad at questions, we're going to do a little catch-up session here because Howard had to ankle us, as we say in Hollywood, for real work. So, David, here's one for you, and I'll chime in. It's from Linda. Linda wants to know, I would like an explanation of how polling is done in an age of no landlines and with cell phone screening of calls. I only answer calls when I know the caller number. The current polls saying Trump is up by 12 in Nevada and several other important states. That makes me very, all caps, skeptical of these results. Can you explain the methodology and the reliability of these polls? Great question.
Yeah, I mean, one of the questions, I mean, what you hear a lot from Biden himself, who should never be talking about polls, is that the polls have been a little bit off base in the last couple of years. And I don't want to get into the weeds on that. But if you talk to any good pollster, I mean, really good pollster, and they will tell you that they want that a competent and credible poll is a multimodal poll where they use several different sources of getting people to participate, some on cell phones, a small number on landlines, some text, some are contacted by text and respond to a text. But a lot of thought has gone into how you reach a wide range of people in this environment. The problem with that is it's very expensive. And so, you know, the campaigns can do it. A lot of news organizations don't. Some use these panels that have, you know, questions where they go back and talk to people. There are healthy debates about those. Some rely too heavily on, you know, cell phones alone. So, the quality of polling can vary greatly. But if you're doing it right, you're doing it multimodal and you're spending a lot of money doing it. The Wall Street Journal, I think, does that, but they do four polls a year for that reason.
Yeah, no. It's in open heart surgery and polling, you don't want the low bid. And sometimes the media goes that way. Basically, polling, the magic of polling science, statistical science, relies on a a real random sample of the universe you want to know the opinion of. So you can go door to door, too expensive, nobody does it anymore. You can call people up, as you said, landline cell phones are hard. You can text them where they hit a link and then go to an online survey. That works pretty well and is used a lot. And then finally, you can buy a panel of voters who take a $20 bill every month to agree to take two polls. So multimodal, and Dave is totally right, is a combination of all those things with a heavy reliance on texting, because people will look at a text clicking through. But I was talking to a pollster the other day, the great Dr. David Hill, who's also the rock concert promoter who first brought the Rolling Stones to Alabama, which I think is the greatest political double credit in our business. Anyway, he was saying he did something in Florida the other day. They had to do about 100, I think it was 160 contacts to get one interview. So the pollsters are struggling with this too, and the way around it is to try a lot of ways to get to that sample. And they know the sample's legit because they compared the demography of the people they interviewed with what we know from census tract and voter file data about who's out there to line it up so it's a good model. So good pollsters know how to do it, but it ain't cheap. And sometimes now it takes a little longer to complete a poll because it's so hard to field the questionnaire. So great, great question, Linda.
I'll ask you a question from Richard, who asks, if Trump picks a senator as his VP and goes on to win the election, which Senate seat would be the best pickup opportunity for Dems? Florida, Rubio, South Carolina, Scott, or Ohio, Vance?
None are easy.
Yeah.
Florida, probably the best. So the Florida Democrats are great at losing statewide elections. South Carolina's hopeless. Ohio would be tough. Part of it's the bench where a Dem star might be, but I'd probably say Florida. All these states would be tough for the D's, but Florida not impossible, I think. What do you think, David?
I'm debating between Florida and Ohio, and you know, we'll see. I mean, we've seen registration in Florida go from a big advantage to 200,000 vote advantage for Democrats to an 800,000 vote advantage for Republicans, and so it's turned it into a very tough state. I know some talk about it as a swing state in the presidential race because of the abortion issue, and that could make it closer. But you know, I don't know in a Senate race. I just don't know. I guess I would go that way. The other would be Ohio because they still have a Democratic senator at least through
for now,
till November.
Yeah.
We'll see if Sherrod Brown, who's an excellent politician, can hang on there. But it has shifted quite a bit too. These are three pretty red states right now. So, but I'll throw in with you. You're a Florida guy.
It's close. It's really a coin toss. Part of it's candidate quality, and I don't really know the Democratic bench in either place that well now, so don't pin your hopes on it. Finally, a quick plug. A lot going on in EV world, so check out evpolitics.org. It's in the middle of the presidential election, and we're doing a lot of cool stuff.
Wait, I have a plug, too, which is the Hacks Book Club, which we haven't done in a while. I just read a great new book. Actually, two. One is Say More by Jen Psaki, which is a great advice to communicators about from lessons she's learned, also life lessons. And then another great book is The Situation Room by George Stephanopoulos. And it, Murphy, you got to read this book.
I've heard it's good. Yeah,
it's really, really good.
I've heard they're
both
good.
Conversation with George at the Chicago Humanities Festival that I'm going to release as a podcast on Thursday on the Axe Files, but it is so good. If you love history and you're interested in the presidency and how presidents behave under crisis, this is a must-read book.
Finally, there's a new Hollywood salacious tell-all out. Well, not really, but I haven't read it yet, but I think it's going to be great. I just listened to him on a pod. Daniel Stern, a wonderful character actor and a very interesting guy, a sculptor, a lot of cool stuff, has a fun book coming out. I think it's called Home Alone or Alone at Home, Daniel Stern. I think it's going to be a good one. So you want to get any of this stuff and you want us to make a penny on each, go to hacksontap.com/bookclub and check them out. There are a lot listed there. Get out your reading shoes because it's fun and these are great books.
All right, brother.
All right.
We'll see you soon.
See you next week. I'm
the great pageant of democracy.
The Howard Wolfson Latex Store. Get a new outfit.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.